From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
Friday, I am Marjorie Egan. You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. Want to give us a weather report, Jim?
Well, I could just like to say only 3 hours until you and I do not go to opening day yet again,
yes,
Marjorie.
You're not jealous or anything. Of course not.
Someday. So this is either the moment you've been anticipating or the moment you've been dreading.
I'm back!
Hillary Clinton is back. Truth is, she never left. She's been a constant national presence for more than two decades. We've seen her as First Lady, U.S. Senator, presidential candidate, Secretary of State, now again as a presidential candidate. So it's your turn. Is she the candidate for the future, or does this feel more like 1990s political leftovers? 877-301-8970. If you're a Democrat who isn't excited about Hillary Clinton, who would you like to see jump into the race? We love to hear from, well, everybody, independents, Republicans. This is a major entry, so much so that, frankly, we're giving short shrift to Marco Rubio. I promise you with John King tomorrow, we will give him his due. 877-301-8970. Ton of Facebook postings. Ian, I like Hillary and think she'd make a fine POTUS, President of the United States. I'm not excited because I don't think she's a strong candidate. Denise says, excited. Diane says, I'm tired of elected officials. I feel they're above the law. I don't care what their last name is. Sherry, I would love a woman, just not this one. Shelley Joe, I'm ready. I mean, this is a polarizing figure. But as I said earlier, in the Democratic primary race, she crushes everybody. The closest, depending on the poll, is either Joe Biden or Elizabeth Warren, but by a distant second or third. And she, I believe, as of the moment at least, and it is absurdly early, she's the most likely leading in the races in the polls to become the next president of the United States.
Christopher says, I was so moved by Hillary's concern about income inequality from her manse in Chappaqua. Are Bill and Hill still broke? He wants to know. And Sam was upset about her fancy clothes. Or $7,000 bracelet. I don't know what $7,000 bracelet he's talking about. I haven't heard about that.
You should mention, are they still broke? That interview she gave, she said they were, quote, dead broke when they left the White House.
Coming out of the White House. It was a poor choice of words. You know, it's such a weird thing to have Hillary running because you think, like I said before, I've grown up with Hillary Clinton, you know. She went through the headband phase and with the different hairdos. And should she have the short hair or the long hair? She stood by her man saying, I'm not Tammy Wynette standing by him. And that was the first woman she had to stand by him with because there were so many women that came after that. And then you went through the pantsuits, you know, her whole outfits and everybody giving her a hard time about the pantsuits. Then, of course, she went through the Lowe's Rose Law Firm mess when she was hiding stuff from there and the healthcare debacle and, you know, the whole debate. Should she stay with Bill Clinton? Should she leave Bill Clinton? Everybody went through the marriage, you know, dissecting the marriage of Bill Clinton. And now here she is again running. So it's sort of this weird, you're caught up in this whole drama. But now you kind of figure, well, they're both grandparents now. You know, Bill's had his heart surgery. He's not, you would presume, as much of a hound dog as he used to be in his younger years. He slowed down a little bit. And, you know, she's an unbelievably smart and prepared woman. So we'll see. I guess my thing with Hillary is you wonder, like I said before when we were talking about this with Charlie and Shannon, what does she stand for? What's her message? And I'm not sure yet. I mean, I think she's going to have to explain that to us. But it's not like a Ted Cruz that you're so sure what his message is, or Elizabeth Warren, you're sure what their message is.
I can tell you what it is. I mean, I think that you said it at the top, that line in the video, and we played the video at the top of the show, which is about a minute and a half of very attractive, I don't mean physically attractive, but very appealing Americans talking about the future. And then she comes on and she talks about the deck being stacked against Americans.
Yeah.
That's a populist message.
It's a populist message, but it seems like it's one she's glommed onto in just recent months because you think of her as being very, very close to Wall Street. I mean, you could also say Barack Obama's too close to Wall Street. But so it makes you wonder, is this a sincere thing? Is this her thing? She's going to fight for this? Or is this something she figures she needs to do now because everybody in America is talking about income inequality?
Now, the opening spot is really a feel-good spot. We'll get to your calls in a minute. We played it for you a few minutes ago. Andy Borowitz, one of the cleverest satirists in America, after this feel-good spot, has a piece up. He says, Hillary Clinton has followed up the official announcement of her candidacy with a new campaign ad featuring nothing but kittens. The 60-second spots stars an assortment of kittens, tabbies, calicos, Siamese, and a dozen other breeds. Clinton herself appears only in the final seconds saying, hi, I'm Hillary. And in addition to that, because, again, there are two kinds of people, those who love Hillary Clinton and those who ridicule her. Here's Saturday Night Live. Kate McKinnon opened the show this Saturday night parodying Hillary Clinton practicing her campaign announcement. Here's part of it.
I'm getting ready for a lot of things.
Whoops, this is the real one. We'll get to the parody in a couple of seconds. 877-301-8970. Which side are you on in this Hillary thing? She's the front runner to be the next president of the United States. What role do you see for Bill Clinton, who obviously went off the reservation, as the saying goes, in the 2008 campaign? Let's start in Haverhill, where Richard's on the phone. Richard, you're next on Boston Public Radio. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Jim and Marjorie.
Hey.
It looks like it's going to be Hillary and Jeb Bush, because they're both going to raise over $2 billion, which is obscene.
Obscene.
And I think they should just nominate the two of them, so we won't have to hear from the clown, half of the clowns from the Republican side, you know, the Santorums and the Ben Nelsons and Trump if he gets into it. So,
Donald Trump.
But, you know, I'm a progressive and I lean to the left, and so I'll have to vote for Hillary for one reason, Jim and Marjorie. It's the Supreme Court and the judiciary nominations.
Yeah.
Because 8 years, which is, could be the next president, there could be 3, 4, maybe 5 Supreme Court nominations. So that's the only reason why I would vote for her.
Richard, thank you for your call. I'm so glad you called, not because of your point of view on who is the next best president, but because you said what we have, Marjorie and I have talked about and others have. There's nothing more important, particularly when they're old justices, that a president does.
Yeah.
Some of these people, like John Roberts was, what was he, 50
gay
when he was
marriage
picked?
Marriage and Obamacare.
Right.
Are
How old
right
was Roberts? 50 when he was picked?
57, I thought.
No, I think he was 50. I think he was close to 50. But in any case, they can serve through 10 presidents. I mean, the impact of Supreme Court nominees and then confirmed Supreme Court justices is huge. It's a wonderful point that Richard
yeah,
makes.
Yeah, because how old is Ruth Bader Ginsburg now?
Her 80s, and she's
trying
ill.
Trying to get her to trial, like she's 83 or 84.
80-something, yeah.
I don't know if you can go on when you're in your 90s.
Had cancer.
Yeah, she has. I know, but she's done unbelievably.
She has done incredibly
unbelievably well.
Well.
I'm a big fan of hers.
So here it is. Here is the SNL thing. This, again, is Kate McKinnon doing her best Hillary Clinton at the top of Saturday Night's show.
You said this new campaign is not about you. No. You know, it's about the people. So let's try one where you don't say I or even your own name.
Okay. Oh, that'll be easy. Got it. Hello, tis I, Hillary Clinton.
Let's stop again, okay? You said I and your full name immediately.
Yes. Oh, shoot. I did?
Yeah. But don't worry. Okay. We'll just delete that one off your phone.
Okay. Know a thing or two about that, right? Oh, Christina, meet my hand in the
okay.
air.
That is Kate McKinnon, 877-301-8970. I mentioned earlier there's a Washington Post poll, 61-33 approval amongst women, 49-46% amongst men. That's for Hillary Clinton. Andrea, you are in your car and you're on Boston Public Radio. Hi there.
Hey, have we earned this kind of day or what? It's so beautiful.
I know.
Oh, it is perfect.
It's great.
Perfect.
So two things. One point is as far as the emails go, Hillary's emails, I just don't think it's any of our business. I mean, are we asking for Rubio or Bush's emails or you know, Rand Paul's emails? I mean, that's my take on the
Well, can you stop? Before you get to your next point, it is totally our business whether, in my opinion, she was the Secretary of State and she and her advisors decided what was public, what was private, and then erased the whole thing. So some people may say, no big deal, that's fine. But I think there's a huge interest when you have arguably the most important cabinet secretary deciding on her own what the public is entitled to in her from the time she was a public servant. And not the public may not care about it, but I think it's a legitimate issue.
I'd be interested what Julian Kayyem would think about that.
We'll ask her on Wednesday.
Yeah, it was something of national security. I wouldn't want to know. I would not want to know. I think that's given that job's given to the people that, you know, are able to take. That's what their job is, you know.
Andrea, let me ask you. Let's stay on it since you've stayed on it. If it turned out it was Condoleezza Rice, who was Secretary of State, erased her whole server. And and said, hey, I made the decision on my own. What were my personal emails and what were my emails? And you, Congress, have no right to see it. Would your position be the same? That, hey, it's not our business?
Because she's a woman?
No, because she's a Republican.
Oh, yeah, I still don't think it's our business.
I think it is. Okay,
yeah.
I hear you. I think it's totally our business, but go ahead.
I don't think, I agree with you this far, Andrea. I don't think it's going to matter very much to anybody that's inclined to vote for her. I mean, it's such it's just not a major front of center burner issue to me. But anyway,
go ahead. I interrupted you. Go ahead, Andrea.
The other thing is, I just think we need to respect the how far a woman has come, and here she is. I mean, we should be stoked. We should be so excited. She doesn't patronize us. She's strong, and she's stronger than a lot of the men. And I just think we need to let's turn it into a positive and say, wow, look at this. And I think we need to respect that. I just do. I think we need to respect a woman.
Yeah.
Madeline.
Except
Andrea,
you know, unlike Condoleezza Rice or Elizabeth Warren or a lot of other women that have done very well, yeah. I mean, let's face it, a lot of the reason she's where she is because the guy she married. I mean, she rode his coattails.
Touche. I'm single and I have no job and I'm struggling. So I hear you, but maybe we get a 2-for-1. Maybe, Bill is a...
Yeah.
Life was good with Bill, Maybe that's a feather in our cap. I don't know.
It's not what Hillary said. Maybe the American people did. Andrea, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. But by the way, Andrea is the person I was talking about when you were offended when I mentioned that there is a huge reservoir of women who are dying to have women. I mean, is that's what I was talking about?
Well, listen, I absolutely think there are. I think there are women that were just totally outraged that all of a sudden this young upstart Barack Obama comes along.
It's her turn.
And it was her turn,
right.
And she should have gotten the deal. So I do. But I think, whoever said that how you feel about Hillary Clinton is a total Rorschach test, it's whatever it is, how you feel about yourself in comparison to her and all that. And that's I think that's really true because, as we've said a million times, there's so much drama in the whole Clinton story. Anyway, Joseph from Rhode Island, what do you think about Hillary?
Hi, Joseph.
Hi, how are you guys? I love your show.
Thank you.
I always listen to it. I don't know. I one thing, before Obama and during the campaign, I think, he came up with, giving a difference to the country. And I think the country felt this is the guy that we need to have. I don't know if this is going to happen to her, but one thing that I believe she has behind her is minorities and women. And also her husband. I wonder if what would happen if she, if it's possible, if she can bring her husband as vice president of the United States.
Well, the problem, first of all, I don't think that's happening. But Joseph, there's a problem, and this was mentioned by Shannon O'Brien, is you can't have putting aside the whole relationship issue. You can't have a vice president and a president violates the Constitution from the same state. And I guess they're both currently from New York. But, Joseph, thanks for the call. That's an interesting question. Is Bill Clinton a net plus or a net minus? I mean, arguably the best politician of our lifetime,
right.
But arguably at times the worst politician of our life. I mean, you remember in South Carolina after she was beaten, hey, Jesse Jackson won South Carolina too.
Yeah.
The point being any old black guy is going to win South Carolina. And then subsequently he was muzzled for the most part. I mean, he even said in an interview the other day he expected to be used more near the end of the campaign,
well,
otherwise known as I've been told to keep my mouth shut, I guess.
I tell you who I bet is going to be used a lot.
Who?
Barack Obama.
Yeah, I would
because
say so
because
too.
His popularity ratings are about average. He's usually popular in cities. He's usually popular among African Americans, obviously. So I think he's going to probably be a great campaigner for her. And Bill's very charming, as long as he doesn't go off the reservation.
Yeah, but it's easier said than done. Do you think?
Know.
I mean, that was pretty dramatic. What happened in South Carolina last time?
Yeah, it was pretty dramatic. But you can see where he could do her a lot of good too. He's persuasive, Bill Clinton.
Well, look, I mean, we all talked. Remember the night of the convention when I think the conventional wisdom, I don't mean that as a pun, was that he did a better job of explaining the benefits of the Affordable Care Act than Barack Obama ever did. I mean, he is a master politician, flaws and all. And there are plenty.
I'll never forget when Martha Coakley was running against Scott Brown, Bill Clinton came to town to campaign for Martha Coakley. And in about 2 minutes, he explained better why you should vote for Martha Coakley if you were so inclined than Martha Coakley had in her whole
great
campaign.
Politician.
He really goes for the visceral issues and get that aw shucks thing going, and he bites his lower lip and everybody's just eating out of his hand.
877-301-8970. One last thing on him, though, and I don't know what I'm sure they're polling this to death, just as Shannon O'Brien said. They've obviously survey grouped the whole issue of grandmother in chief issue, too. Does too much of the Clintons feed this notion that they're the past, not the future. I mean, you keep in mind, by the way, the issue in great part is going to be who the Republicans nominate.
Right.
I mean, let's assume it is somebody like Rubio, who you said looks like a boy. Well, while that may be a negative on one side, he looks too young to be president. The flip side is there's pretty dramatic contrast between the future, even if you don't like his prescription, and the past, which is, I mean, that's what she's got to fight, don't you think? Is it just like Jeb Bush does, it's a return to the past, even if you liked part of the Bush presidencies or you liked the Clinton presidency, it is the past in a lot of people's minds.
But I think, as Charlie Chipio said, who is a Republican, you know, you look at the Republican ticket and a lot of the younger people are kind of out there in terms of their politics for the general election. So I don't know. If you have two past people running against each other, then obviously it cancels it all out.
That's a good point. Cynthia, you're in Rhode Island. You're next on Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan, thank you much for the call. Hi.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I have, I'm in my early 60s, so I've been around for a while, and I'm pretty much done with the dynasties. I'm sorry. No more Bush, no more Clintons. And to speak to someone's comment, I honestly believe that if Hillary Clinton did get in, it would be because of Bill. There's too many people in the states right now who believe that Bill was the best, and they're not voting for Hillary. They're voting for Bill because they're thinking he's going to be some sort of maybe advisor to her, or she'll mimic his policies, which I don't think will happen, but I think that's what the general populace has in the back of their head.
Yeah. Well, there are two other people. We don't hear much about them, Jim Webb and Martin O'Malley, who have said they are interested in the nomination, but they seem to be sort of back-burnered all the time, aren't they?
Well, I mean, her profile... What's that?
I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead.
I said we definitely need fresh blood. I'm not sure about them myself. I'm looking at to what they stand for. Someone else made a comment about Hillary and Jeb are going to push about $2 billion into this campaign.
Yeah.
And that just speaks to itself. Whoever spends the most money, and I think it's historically true, usually wins the presidency. It's just a sad commentary on how easily the American public can be swayed. We did a fresh start with Barack Obama. I think we need to continue it.
By the way, Obama raised more than $1 billion, Cynthia. It was not like it was a grassroots money-free campaign. I believe
you're right.
He broke all records, and she and whoever the Republican is will break them yet again. Cynthia, thank you for the call. Now, there's interesting. There's somebody who says bringing Bill along for the ride is an asset. And I would argue, doesn't that sort of undercut the women's excitement with Hillary Clinton? Isn't it undercut a little bit when you hear someone say, it's a twofer. She gets to bring that guy along with her as an advisor. No?
I think the truth is that I mean, she's obviously a very, very smart and capable woman, and you could argue how well she's done as Secretary of State. Lots of people point out how wonderful things she's done for women and children, et cetera. But the person with the political talent in that family is not Hillary. It's Bill. And so it's not exactly – I don't see it as this big feminist breakthrough in the same way as I would see if someone, a Margaret Thatcher or politicians in the United States of America that
it's
are women.
A little late for her, Rhonda.
Well, it is, but I'm saying she was not there because of her. I mean, this
you
is
think
like
people are thinking that? I understand that. I mean, you said that to the court. I understand that, and obviously that is factually accurate. Even though I think she's been very active as an official since she did become a United States Senator, then Secretary of State, and that sort of thing. But do you think anybody factors that in? Do people say she's only there or would not have, not only there, she would not have been there were it not for the fact that she was the wife of one of the most popular politicians
of
our time?
Well, I think it's clearly obvious, but the question is, does that matter in terms of your vote? I mean, are you going to say, I'm not going to, I think she's, I mean, to me, and it seems like we get involved in the minutiae all the time in politics. That's what we do for a living. But I think you're going to look at what she stands for, and you're going to look at what the Republican that's nominated stand for and figure out what's going to be the best thing. And a lot of people are emailing here, and they're saying that they find her claims about income inequality kind of strange, considering they consider her very close to Wall Street, and considering the amount of money she's taking for speeches, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know. I think, when you get down to the voting day, you're just looking at who you think is going to be the best for the economy, probably. A lot of people don't think this is going to be the foreign policy election that a lot of the Republicans are hoping it will be, because they feel as though Barack Obama's been very weak on foreign affairs.
You know, the interesting thing, I'm watching CNN as you're speaking, and they have both sides represented there on the Hillary Clinton thing. And the person they have advancing the Hillary Clinton candidacy and agenda is Hillary Rosen. Talk about the past. Why is Hillary Rosen famous, at least known by much of the public? Do you remember which trouble she got in?
I forgot what she got in trouble for, but now I realize it was because she said that Ann Romney had never worked a day in her life.
Right. When Mitt Romney,
after she raised five children.
Right. Mitt Romney, I may get this a little bit wrong, but essentially Mitt Romney was out saying, I know a lot about the economy because I've listened to Ann. Ann has connected me to what average people in America care about and what the economy, women, average women in America care about. And that's when Hillary Rosen said she's never worked a day in her life. I think for which she either had apologized or was chastised. I mean, is that who you'd have as your front person for? Would she be the person you'd put on television on CNN to be advancing your agenda in 2015? It would not be mine.
I've forgotten it. I mean, I knew she got in trouble.
Think the other side's going to forget it?
Well, yeah, that's a good point.
In any case, let's go to Kelly. You're in Gloucester. You're next on Boston Public Radio. Hey, Kelly.
Hi. I'm so excited to be on with you guys. I'm a first-time caller, and I enjoy you guys so much.
Well, we're excited if you're excited. Kelly, congratulations, and thanks for making the call. Hi.
Hi. It saddens me that I believe it is going to come down to who has the most money, that it comes to Bush and Clinton. I would love to vote for a woman, but only if she's really the right person for the job. Voting is one of the biggest rights, our biggest call to duty to as a citizen, and it makes me very apathetic to go to the voting polls to vote for either one of these candidates.
Who would satisfy who would fill your body with excitement, Kelly, to go to that voting booth? Who would that person be?
Well, Elizabeth Warren, but she's not going to. I listen to you guys all the time talking about that she's just not going to.
Well, first of all, don't accept that from me. I am still convinced that there's a space for her. I haven't spoken to her in a year, and I have no inside information. But I don't think it's over till it's over. But go ahead.
Good, but she would make me excited. She would make me excited.
Because she stands for, well, I'm presuming because you think she stands for something.
Yes.
Yeah, me
yes.
too.
I'm not sure Hillary or the Clintons or the Bushes stand for the American person, the regular American person anymore.
Yeah. And I'm not sure what Jeb Bush is. I mean, if you said, what's his big message?
Well,
let
me give you...
the chief thing he's going to...
Let me tell you what I think he's got to... Kelly, thank you for your first call, and I hope you do it again soon. Thank you. You know what Bush has to recommend, and regardless, in my opinion, regardless of where you are on any of the issues...
He's smarter than his brother.
No, well, that's... No, I didn't say that. To be for Common Core and to be for a pathway to citizenship is anathema in Republican primaries. He is not trying, at least so far, to slide from those pretty heavy positions into the murky middle and then to slide back there in the general election. So, again, even if you're against Common Core and even if you're against the pathway to citizenship, at least in my mind, you have to admire somebody who sticks to his or her guns on something they care deeply about. And I think that's admirable.
Well, he stands for a moderate Republican. I mean, that's
which is why he probably won't get the nomination, despite the fact that he has the highest name recognition of any Republican.
If you think a lot of Republican, the big contributors, the big donors, the big billionaires that are going to fund this campaign, if they don't want to have a conservative, they're going to give a lot of money.
Who did billionaire Shelley Adelson from Dorchester, Massachusetts support in the last election and probably single-handedly kept his campaign alive? Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich was not about to be president of the United States.
That's
a billionaire. He's savvy. It was in huge part because of his pro-Israel views. But a lot of the huge money in the Republican Party, the guy, I can't think of the guy's name, the guy who said the best abortion thing is an aspirin between your knees or something.
Oh, God.
He was a big, wasn't he a big Santorum fan? Am I not right about that?
I don't remember.
The point is there's a lot of money behind candidates who a lot of people, I don't think Newt Gingrich is a marginal player. He was Speaker of the House, but he was marginal in terms of likely him being the president of the United States. So in any case, that's the deal.
And Annie says she's ready for a twofer.
What's that? For the Clinton
Bill
thing?
And Hill. Hill and Bill. Bill and Hill.
Okay. So we promise you tomorrow when John King joins us, we will not only talk about Hillary, but we will talk about Marco Rubio, who did, even though most people don't know, did announce his candidacy today on the Republican side.
Okay. Coming up, when it comes to faith, how will Hillary Clinton position herself on the campaign trail? That and more is next when we meet with the reverends. We'll be all revved up. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. Here with us in Studio 3 for his and her take on the moral dilemmas of the day are Reverends Irene Monroe and Emmett Price. Irene Monroe is a religion columnist. Reverend Emmett Price is a professor of music at Northeastern University. Good to see you both.
Hey, thanks for having us back.
Great
pleasure
to be here. Irene whispered in my ear when she came
what
in she might say something nice about the Pope today.
Oh,
let's do that first then before she changes her mind.
You're right. I might change my mind.
Yeah. Well, we don't want to do that first. We want to go in order here, James. Yeah. I've got my little list all made up. So we're going to start with Walter Scott. People know he was the unarmed man that was stopped for a traffic violation and ended up being shot multiple times by a police officer down in South Carolina. We talked about this last week. We've talked about it a lot. But I wonder what you guys make of the fact that we saw that video over and over and over and over again on TV. And it seemed almost a little disrespectful to me, but I don't know. Maybe I'm mistaken. What do you think, Irene?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that my concern is that when you see it over and over again, people become insensitive to the dehumanization of what's going on, you know, to black male bodies. I think the thing that bothers me, and I have a new slogan, just as we say Black Lives Matter, I think we need another one called How Cops Respond Matter. And it really puts
that.
Yeah, I think it puts an emphasis in a decent, it sort of tamped down some of the edginess people have with it, looking at it as just a black and white issue, because we are really talking about the culture. But there's a bigger issue that I'm most concerned about, and I'm really concerned, and I always say this, that today now a black man's best friend these days is a video of him being stopped by the police. But I'm really worried about the trauma, the sort of what will become the intergenerational trauma of seeing black bodies beaten and brutalized, and I worry about particularly Mr. Scott's incident, because one of the things that was interesting is that we see him get out of the car and run, and we hear from his brother, his oldest brother, who said he never wanted to go to jail. So it made me think about, was this a form of what we would call cop-assisted suicide? And that's the whole thing, that these people may not otherwise be suicidal, but may simply decide that life is not worth living if they're going to be incarcerated, and then provoke the police to kill them. Because this, we're talking about a 50-year-old man. We're not talking about a kid who makes dumb mistakes, really, yeah, and who's just, you know, impetuous.
You know, I have to, you know, Emmett, I have raised this issue nonstop because it's driving me crazy. The first time I saw the video, and admittedly, I'm not a fan of his, so that may have colored my view, was on Don Lemon, mm-hmm, the night of the thing, where essentially this was a loop. The whole hour that I was watching, all I saw was this black guy getting shot in the back. And as I said to Marjorie, I think the next day, if that had been a white woman who had been shot in the back from Weston, mm-hmm, would we have seen that video?
No.
10,000 times? And by the way, I think there is value to seeing the video. I'm surely not suggesting it shouldn't be made public. But the nonstop playing of it, in my mind at least, was a function of the color of the guy's skin.
Yeah. I mean, you will recall that when the Eric Garner situation happened, you know, we talked about the video, and I told you I refused to watch it. Mm-hmm. And every time it came on, I turned, and I do the same thing with this scenario. Because I just refuse to watch it. For me, it's an opportunity for, and I would say this, for white people to come to grips with the fact that this is a reality and not just a nuance or just some, you know, extreme situation. It's the opportunity to replay it and replay it to see if they can backseat quarterback and see if this is real. And you have 90 different police shooting murders since January 1 and 200 since the Trayvon Martin case. And so this is a situation that's very different from Mamie Thiel making the corpse of Emmett Thiel public so that folks can actually see the heinous crime and criminalization of blackness.
That's
per
right.
se. This is very different. This is media orientation. This is like over-sensational, and it needs to stop.
You're not, but let me be clear. You're not saying it shouldn't have, you chose not to watch it. You're not saying it shouldn't have been played.
I think it should be
You're
played.
You're saying it shouldn't be played ad nauseum.
Exactly. It should be played one or two times and then archived.
It becomes a form of sadistically and perhaps not intentionally, but it becomes a form of infotainment in a way.
I think there's truth to that.
And the interesting thing that has troubled me, that even as we now have this case with Mr. Scott, Walter Scott, we have a new case of this guy, Mr. Harris, 44 years old from Oklahoma, who was just recently shot. And it brought back.
This was the alleged taser/gun mistake.
The cop thought meant to, quote, shoot him, but accidentally tased him. And then, of course, it plays into implicit and explicit bias that do I automatically, when I see a black male body, I just automatically shoot? But the other thing that becomes really very, very interesting is that it resonated very much with the Eric Gardner story where he says, I can't breathe. And the cops, you know, using explicatives said, I don't effing care and stuff. So that's why I agree with Emmett when he talks about the looping, the ongoing looping of it. We become insensitized. We move so far from it.
And there's a huge tension because Jim's analogy of the white woman in Weston, that happens.
Yeah.
I mean, you have scenarios where cops pull over white individuals, male and female, and you get mouthing back and you get all kinds of, you know, physical altercations, mm-hmm. but there's never a shooting. And I don't want anyone to get shot, so I'm not suggesting that it should happen, but there is a differential treatment in these situations, and you control Facebook and Twitter and find all these situations to see the differential in treatment.
Yeah, you know, let me tell you the one, I know this is not an original thought, but since I'm sort of a messenger of all negativism today, I do think this is a turning point kind of thing, is while I thought the Eric Garner video was clear cut, I can understand how some small minority of people don't. I did think the Tamir Rice video in Cleveland was clear cut. I understand how some may not. There's nothing. There's no other side to this thing. And when you see the numbers out of places like South Carolina, I don't know, I'm right in front of me. What was it, 200 officer shootings? I think it was over a five-year
period. Yeah.
In every single case,
yes.
And not one case was it deemed to be an inappropriate shooting,
yes.
Right. By the cop. I have to believe, and this may be naive on my part, that going forward, it's going to be a lot harder for authorities to say when there isn't a video, oh, by the way, there was no question. The cop was totally in the right. The defendant provoked, I mean, the shootee, the dead person or the person shot, provoked them. It seems to me this, as his family is hoping, the Scott family hopes, that this is the beginning of a new era of average people, not activists, average people questioning the official line when someone is killed prematurely in at least a questionable situation. I hope
that's
the case.
I just love the way you keep hope alive on this.
Well, I rarely do, but I do now.
That is the other side, obviously, of seeing this, that you wouldn't see the white woman in Weston, but you can't have missed poor Mr. Scott.
That's
and,
right.
And when you do see it, almost every time you see it, you think, look at that.
Right.
The guy's running away, and he just keeps shooting. And it just unless you are,
and it would have been another justifiable homicide had there not been a video.
But let's not forget that when the case first broke, the conversation was, why did he grab the police officer's taser?
Right.
See, so we still have this criminalization of the black body before we get to the point.
And by the way, he had child support issues. I mean, he had some old-time assault and batteries, but they were from like way back in the early 90s. So he was worried about his outstanding child support.
And why do we know that?
Not violent.
And why do we know that? See, that has nothing to do.
And that, to me, proves the point that, you know, was this cop-assisted suicide for him? Because this guy is not a criminal. This is a man who's...
Well, I don't think many people go to... How many people go to jail for child support? Not that
right.
many.
Right. That's exactly right. So how, you know, he's being harassed.
I don't
harassed.
Think it was suicide. I think it was the reality of black anxiety.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the absolute anxiety of seeing these cases time and time again and knowing that the time that you get stopped could be... You know,
that's
Irene
right.
used to say, I'm glad she doesn't say it anymore, but I hope I see Emmett next week.
That's,
right.
When well, I do. About these in the I height. Do.
And there is a real anxiety there that I'm not sure that some folks realize the heightened aspect of it.
And he might have just panicked.
Yeah.
That's the thing, that they don't see the humanness of us, because some of us might very well panic. And that's why I say how cops respond matter, and we really need to emphasize that.
You know, I don't think we've seen you since this, but very briefly before we change gears, did you both see Anderson Cooper's interview with the mother of Walter Scott?
Oh, you want to cry.
This woman, I mean, for those who haven't seen it, if you haven't, you have to Google it and see it. While obviously she mourns the loss of one of her sons, in the same interview, she talks about forgiveness
yes, yes,
for
yes.
the shooter. For yes. the, it is one of the most powerful things I have ever seen. She's We're talking Emmett Price and Irene
Christian
Monroe.
She's a better Christian than I could ever be.
She's a
really.
Better human than really. I could ever be. Speaking of Christian, let's talk about Hillary Rodham Clinton for a moment. I did not. Who referred to her in something we read this morning as a social justice Methodist, Marjorie? Where was
it's
that?
It's in the headline, the Washington Post.
Washington Post. Yeah. She carries a Bible in her purse. How important – it seems to me – we've had this discussion ad nauseum through the years, Marjorie and I, that unless you are a person of faith, in fact, a person who wears their faith in their sleeve – I haven't ever found her to be that way. Have you? I'm not sure that it's pretty hard to get elected president
of the
United States.
I like the fact when Bill Clinton used to carry the Bible out of church right in the middle of the Monica Lewinsky mess. You know? Yeah. I like, big, fat right. Bible. But she does. I mean, she was very involved in her church growing up, the First United Methodist Church in Illinois. She was on this guild that cleaned the altar, visited inner city Chicago churches. This is from this piece this morning in the Washington Post. She had a spiritual mentor from that church, and is that they also talk about her carrying the person of Bible.
I'm suspect. The interesting thing is that nowadays, you know, electability to public office is how churched you are. And I don't know when it started, because Jimmy Carter truly was in many ways an evangelical Christian, and never once did he proselytize.
Absolutely.
You know, and did I know whether he carried his Bible or
totally
what he
right.
did on Sunday mornings? I just think that we are just a better nation when we prohibit any religious test or requirement, really, for public office. And I think another thing that we don't really recognize is that when we're talking about religion, we're really talking about Christian hegemony, because we've only really had one Catholic president, and we've never had a Jewish president. So, I mean, I think we're
almost had a Mormon.
We almost did. But I just think we're a better nation when we really embrace the whole idea of separation between church and state, and that we are an ecumenical people, and we're a pluralistic
nation.
Well, but
answer my question, all three of you. I don't remember. I mean, again, she just announced yesterday, but Hillary Clinton is not a
no.
– she doesn't wear her religion, and her faith appears to be real from this Washington Post thing. I mean, she's just a religious person who has that as part of her life.
I mean, I think that's part of her testimony, and it's beautiful. But if it's going to be posed as what's going to get her elected, I would love to see her tithe some of that two point whatever billion that will be raised for a campaign.
That would be wonderful.
To some impoverished people and homeless people. Yeah. I'd love to see that.
Yeah. Well, you did see. I remember when they announced the people's contributions to charity. Poor Joe Biden wasn't doing very well.
Oh, that was horrible. That's right.
But Romney was doing very well. I think Obama was doing pretty well, too. They were both tithing. I think they weren't they up like 14% or something like that?
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Speaking of this, have you seen the commercial? I don't know why this came. Well, it did come to mind because of something Irene said. Have you seen the commercial that I think plays nonstop? I think it's on CNN. I hope I have this right. Of Ron Reagan Jr. On behalf of an atheist organization.
I love it.
It's really quite we should maybe next week talk about it, because I don't have the sound of it.
Atheist running for president?
No. About being an atheist.
That's right.
Card-carrying atheist. Mm-hmm. And he mentions the name of the organization, which I'm embarrassed to say. I don't know if it's Madeline Murray O'Hare. I don't know whose it is. It's a commercial, a public announcement for atheism.
Well, you know, he is with the movement of the biggest group in the United States of America, because the biggest movement in America is to know God. So
is that really true?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. No, right. Non-belief.
But see, you know, Cruz has come out and declared his candidacy. And, of course, there were all these religious references in Rubio. So, I mean,
Cruz declared didn't
at Liberty University.
Liberty or
where
right.
he never attended.
Right.
Where he
right.
never
yeah.
attended.
Right. So, I mean, the point is that you can't grandstand any bigger than Cruz, because, right, he's really in the heart of it. And so, I mean, it's really a shame that we look, our lens of looking at a candidate is just how religious.
You know, the evangelical Christian vote, before we get to the Pope, which we do every week on Pope Watch, I was stunned in the last election, or maybe it was two election cycles ago, because the stereotype I think people like me have of evangelical Christians, and I know you two know this not to be true, is this Deep South kind of stuff. What was that number we used a lot, Marjorie? Was it in the Pennsylvania Republican primary? 40-some percent of the voters were self-identified evangelical.
That's Pensatucky.
That is a corner of Pennsylvania where I grew up. I didn't grow up in that corner, but a corner of the state in which I mean, it is a huge, huge movement. And by the way, they are moving on a lot of issues that I know you, Irene Monroe, care about, especially young evangelicals. In any case, it's that time again, boys and girls. It is Pope Watch. And I was going to bring up the first topic, but before we do, why don't we just find out, why do you have a positive take on the Pope this week?
I like the Pope this week very much. I applaud the Pope. He doesn't always get it right, but he certainly did yesterday in Mass. And I think that when he talked about the Armenian genocide, I think that it was quite appropriate to name it for what it is. And the tactics of genocide denial is always predictable, and I think that the Turkish government used every one of them, which is question and minimize the statistics, attack the motivations of the truth teller, blame out-of-control forces for committing the killing, claim the massacres didn't fit the legal definition of genocide, even when we had over a million. And lastly, studies have shown that that genocide scholars have proven that the best predictor of future genocide is the denial of a past one, and particularly impunity. For its perpetrators. So I think that, you know what, he was on the right side of justice. You know, this is a guy that, he doesn't shock me because I know he has it in him. And this was one of those moments I said, you know, right on, Poppy.
100th anniversary.
I'm going to get you a pizza.
Of the genocide. Well, his doctor said that they prefer you don't. But it's the 100th anniversary on the 24th. My understanding, I think I'm right about this, that Turkey has pulled their ambassador to the Vatican. But I mentioned to Marjorie, a good friend of mine who's a high-profile Armenian in this country, very involved in Armenian organizations. I was supposed to speak to him on the phone yesterday. I couldn't speak to him yesterday because he told me on Saturday he had gotten on a plane to fly to the Vatican just to hear what the Pope had to say, and then got back on a plane. It's a huge moment.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I'm still trying to catch my breath from Irene being excited about the Pope this week. But I totally agree that this was a huge, courageous move, particularly in the landscape of international politics. Turkey's response is Turkey's response. But I believe, as Irene very articulately said, that it's time that we deal in the truth. Mm-hmm. Right. So that, you know, back in 1915, the whole Ottoman Empire and all the stuff that happened there, it was a mass genocide. And we need to call it for that. You have a mass exodus of people who really don't have a country to claim. Right. Because there is no more Armenia. Right. And so this is a real important moment for this generation and this population of people, as the descendants and the diaspora.
And these are crimes against humanity. And my hope is that in acknowledging this genocide, then it opens the historical canon and rewrite it correctly of other genocides, those that had taken place in Japan. You know, we acknowledge the one, certainly the Holocaust, but we don't acknowledge others. I mean, it took a while when Clinton acknowledged the one in Rwanda. I think that it opens the door that we can look at when these things are happening, let's call it and let's bring about change. So I think that he set a great example of, you know, truth to, you know, just telling the truth.
Guy, I hate to
I'm deciding the same thing.
This did you hear about the French ambassador?
Yes, see, now,
I think
this
it's
is
maybe
so
better you don't bring this up. Oh,
Marge,
why are you ruining the mood?
Okay, now this is the part that gets me upset.
Okay. It's too
because
late.
See, this is like two steps forward.
We should
and three
point
steps back.
Point out that
and I can't stop talking about this because it really does bother me.
Okay, I should tell people the Vatican's been dragging its feet. Back in January, they nominated this guy Lawrence Stefanini to be the France's ambassador to the Holy See, and they've not yet approved him, and there are suspicions that it has to do with Stefanini being gay. But I did ruin the mood, didn't I? Completely.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm going.
Yeah.
I'm leaving.
Okay. Okay. Well, we hope that this is not true and that he will be approved, and we'll see what happens. But it seems to be taking an awful long time.
And it's hypocritical. This is a guy that said, who is to judge? And the interesting thing that bothers me about this, the Pope knows the Vatican is very gay.
Yeah,
so it's not like
we don't know the reason yet. I mean, this is akin to the Loretta Lynch situation. We just don't know.
Well, say more about
that.
What do you mean?
Yeah,
I mean, there's politics at the Vatican. I mean, you can't just pose somebody and say the Pope has to approve on them. There's a political system that goes into play, and all of the reporting that we've read is conjecture, trying to figure out why.
No, it isn't.
And the analysis has pointed to the fact that this person is perhaps openly gay or whatnot, and he's from France or whatnot. But we don't know. No one said
France or whatnot, openly gay or whatnot.
No one said that the reason why he has not been voted in is this.
Of course not. Of course, no one would ever be so blatantly prejudiced.
Sure, they
would. No, they wouldn't. No, they wouldn't. But the point about it is that the Pope has the power, like he called the genocide that took place in Armenia. He has the power to change, really, that at the homophobia that is pervasive in
the emperor.
Oh, well, listen, that's not true because he's doing empire.
I refuse.
He's doing empire building.
Can I make a suggestion? Can I make a suggestion?
Marjorie, why'd you raise
it? One of the co-hosts of the show.
I shouldn't have.
Let's do this. Let's end with 30 seconds of you talking about the Pope in Armenia one more time. Irene. Go ahead. Just to leave us with a different mood. Go ahead, take 30 seconds. Go ahead.
He was on the right side of justice.
Right
Thank
side
you.
Of justice. Thank right
you.
Side
That's
of
enough.
History.
You don't
Speaking
need 30
truth and
seconds.
Power.
Amen.
That was
Amen.
Beautiful.
He's
Amen.
Right.
All the
Thank
way
you
around.
Both.
Reverend Imee Monroe is a syndicated religion columnist. Both. Reverend Emmett Price, the professor of music at Northeastern University. His latest book is The Black Church and Hip-Hop Culture Toward Bridging the Generational Divide. Emmett and Irene, we had that wonderful moment there. You're right, I did ruin it, but I couldn't. I should have just kept quiet. Anyway, thanks much for being here. Coming up, the big myth on campus when it comes to a college degree is where we go not as important as what we think it is. Frank Bruni thinks so. He joins us next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.